So, continuing text chapter 4, text 205, Rules of Asnatika. A brahmana must never eat a meal given at a sacrifice that is offered by one who is not a Kshatriya, by one who sacrifices for a multitude of persons, by an unqualified single woman, or by a eunuch. When those persons offer sacrificial viands in the fire, it is unlucky for holy men, and it displeases the gods. Let him therefore avoid it. Let him never eat food given by intoxicated, angry, or sick men, nor that in which hair or insects are found, nor what has been touched intentionally with the foot, nor that at which the slayer of a learned Brahman has looked, nor that which has been touched by a contaminated woman, nor that which has been pecked at by birds or touched by a dog, nor food at which a cow has smelt, nor particularly that which has been offered by an invitation to all comers, nor that given by a multitude, or what is declared to be bad by learned man, nor the food given by a thief, a musician, a carpenter. What is an user? You know what Urser is? An Urser is a lender of money, a money lender. They're always in the bad books, aren't they? One who has been initiated for the performance of a Shraddha sacrifice, a miser, or one bound with fetters. Also, those that are given from another's meal. Or given without due respect. Or by an ungrateful person. Or a dealer in weapons. Also in a house where, in a man's house where he has a paramour. So, principle here is that all these different situations, we see that the consciousness is very low. And because of this low consciousness, then someone who's very serious about spiritual upliftment, their consciousness will be disturbed. So it's the understanding is that when you go to someone's house, you take and they give you something to eat, then there's always an exchange. Nothing comes for free in the world. Everything has its, every action has a reaction. So that means when you take something from someone, something comes with it. Like that. You get something to eat, but you also take from them their consciousness, karmas, accepted, all these different things come. So for someone who's very serious, then one has to be careful. Lord Chaitanya said, Vishayer anna kaile dushto hoiman. That when you take the food of someone who is materialistic, then the mind becomes disturbed. The mind becomes dushto, becomes, wicked, yes, like this. So the mind is the central pivot in spiritual life that you're trying to deal with to get it to accept service to the Lord and reject simply material values, a material endeavor. So it's a very important point. One may say it doesn't matter much, but the mind is what you actually have to live with. You know, you can walk away from so many things, but it's very difficult to walk away from the mind. It has a nasty habit of following you wherever you go. So you have to be very careful of this. So in other words, it should be, the situation should be comfortable, it should be proper according to one's nature. The dealings must be respectful. Everything must be clean. Then we're talking about something being proper. Otherwise, then all those situations will contaminate the mind. Because we see all the different personalities are mentioned. Generally, they have a particular mentality. You know, they have a particular mentality. Like that. It means like just like the someone who sells weapons. Now you can say it's just a business, but one knows that people take weapons and they do so many things with those weapons. So that means the person has to actually cut off from his mind what will happen with these weapons afterwards, right? He just has to forget about that, you know? Because especially when you find that, you know, from this, then there's so much difficulty happening in the world. You know, people are being killed and so many things are happening that they're not proper. One, for one's own business sake, one can't think, well, maybe if I don't sell these, then it may reduce some of this, or why I should be involved in the process. Because if one thinks like that, it'll be very bad for business. So one has to become hard-hearted. So therefore, we find on that side, there's some hard-heartedness. It's not that he's cheating in his business or doing anything. But just to do it, there must be something closed off. You know? Something must be there. You know, our mentions here, Brahman wouldn't accept from... How do you say? Yeah. You know, trainers of hunting dogs. You know, because there's that mood that you have to get them to... fight, kill, catch. So you have to be able to imbibe that in the dog. A teacher can't give something to the student that he doesn't have. Right? You know, if you have something, you know, you might find Jara Bharat would be very difficult for him to train hunting dogs. You know, he won't even step on an ant. So how he'll be able to train these hunting dogs? Like this. So all these, means all these different things match with mentalities. And we find that one has to be very, very careful about this. So when you're dealing with someone who is devoted to the Lord, then, now this gives this next point here. The gods have considered... here it says... Brahman who knows the law must not eat cooked food given by an unqualified person who performs no shraddha. But on failure of other means of sustenance, he may accept raw grain sufficient for one night and day. It means if you can't, even if there's no proper people to accept something from, you can accept from even these unqualified people, but only uncooked things, but only enough for one day, because you don't want to become dependent. You have to be able to take that, and then you'll cook. Because the whole point is one must always remember the Lord is actually the one who is maintaining. Like that. So the idea, first of all, of the begging, or living in this way of just what comes easily, is that the idea is that it's the Lord who's arranging. The Lord is arranging these things. So if somehow or another the Lord hasn't made arrangements in some very simple way, then okay, then one can accept uncooked things and then cook, but not more, not for many days, because you don't want to become dependent upon these kind of people. You just take it one day at a time in that case. Like that. The gods have considered the respective merits of a miserly Srotriya and of a liberal moneylender, and declared the food of both to be equal in quality. So in other words, even they're doing that service, if someone is very, their mood is very, you know, they're very, how do you say, they have good qualities despite this, then someone who is in a qualified position but bad consciousness, then these are considered equal. But now this is leaving out of the equation if someone actually knows the Lord. If someone knows the Lord, then this doesn't matter. Like Lord Chaitanya was traveling the Jarikanda forest, and then in his travels he came across one village, and in this village there was one Brahmin. And Lord Chaitanya met this Brahmin and they were speaking. And then the Brahmin, you know, mentioned that he would very much like to invite the Lord, who is sannyasi at the time, to come to his house to eat, but he wouldn't because Lord Chaitanya came from a very, you know, elevated background of Brahmins, and he was doing the Brahminical activities for the community of I think goldsmiths, all businessmen dealing in gold. So he says, because of this, because when they deal in gold, they get, because Kali lives where gold is, right? When Parikit Maharaj found Kaliraj, then he banished him from his kingdom. And since his kingdom was the world at the time, he was the emperor, then Kali said, you know, you please, you're giving shelter to everyone as the king, so you also should give shelter to me. You give me some place. So then Parikit Maharaj thought, and then he said, okay, you can stay wherever there's gold is being hoarded. Where there's gold, where there's, what is it? There are many places, right? Slaughtering animals. Oh, I see, but the gambling? What about that? So that means there'd be five places.
So he says first four, and then Kali said that in your kingdom there are not these things.
Oh, I see, okay. So then, okay, wherever there's slaughtering of animals, illicit sex, wherever there's gambling or intoxication. And then Kali said, there aren't any of this in your kingdom. So then he said, where there's hoarding of gold. Okay, so that's always going on. So then, because that creates a mentality. So because he's there, even though you're dealing with it, it will cloud the mentality. Just by the nature of the gold. Because it's very illusory. It's metal. But it has a potency. It attracts very much. The color of it, it's the shininess of it. So it increases material desire. So those who deal with it naturally will have increased desire. So it's considered that being a Brahmin for that community, naturally one would be taking on part of this, you know, mentality. Just like, I think it was Shikhandi, because they were from Gandhar. So Gandhar is out Afghanistan. So the royal family is a very good line, very pure. They are royal. But their peoples were not of a very high caliber, right? Because the farther they would get from the Arya Desh, then the more that they would be wild. And so because they take tax from their people, they take along with that karma. So naturally that means that the king's from that place, when they have citizens that aren't of good standard, naturally they'll have more karma, bad karma, than kings of pious places. So then they were joking amongst themselves that he was not very qualified because of his unqualified citizens. So this aspect is there, of the subtleness of the mentality. So then, here is that a Shrotriya, if he doesn't have the proper mentality, the story. So then Lord Chaitanya went on and was asking, and then in their discussions, then it came up that Madhavendra Puri had previously come through this way and gone to this village. And then he asked, Lord Chaitanya asked, well, where did Madhavendra Puri stay? Where did he accept his meals? And then the Brahmin said, well, he stayed with us, he ate with us. So then Lord Chaitanya said, well, if Madhavendra Puri, if he is eating with you, then that's good enough for us. Like that, if such an elevated personality. Because this person was a devotee of the Lord. And when one's a devotee of the Lord, that is the purpose. See, the idea before is that the Shrotriya says here, one who is not a Shrotriya. So Shrotriya means that he understands the ritual, the purpose behind the, means he knows what is going on in the sacrifice. So with that is there's supposed to be naturally a mentality that goes with that, some realization that goes with that. Right? Means if you've studied very vastly, then there's expected that there's also going to be a depth of understanding. So the whole idea is if you accept bhiksha or meals from such a person, then also those good qualities will be coming. Like that. But now if that Shrotriya is trained in the knowledge but doesn't have the realization, so he's very miserly, his behavior is not up to the standard, then that is not good. And if you have a very liberal and very nice and, you know, means generally money collectors are very miserly themselves. But if you have one that's not miserly, he gives money, he's very kind, then it's considered equal. Because it's like he has a bad occupation but a good mentality. The other guy has a good occupation but bad mentality. So it balances. Like this. But then, more than this, then is someone who is devoted to the Lord. Then it doesn't really matter what the background is. As long as they are not proud. Right? If they're proud, then that is a disqualification. But if they're not proud and they understand that, you know, due to our previous activities, our previous life, then we have come into this situation, you know, this has been arranged by the Lord, but, you know, we try to always absorb ourselves in thinking of the Lord and serving the Lord, then there's no problem. Like that Brahmin. Like that. Even though he was the Brahmin for the gold merchants, his consciousness was very elevated. Right? Like this. So here what's talking about is just the mentality, not the consciousness, the mentality. Or you could say in the five levels of consciousness, if somebody is very, the Shrotriya who's of bad mentality may be very much on anamoy, pranamoy, like this. He's interested in himself, his family members, and that's all. And this moneylender may be, you know, very liberal in that and may have situated more in the manamoy. But still, that's still material. But if you have someone who's situated on anandamoy, on the transcendental platform, then it really doesn't matter what the material situation is. Like that. That's it. Ah, now, this is an interesting point. Now the gods, they have considered the respective merits of this miserly Shrotriya and the liberal moneylender and all that. And then they gave their judgment that it's equal. Right? Then after this, we see that the Lord of created beings, Prajapati, he came and he spoke. He said, do not make that equal, which is unequal. It means the gods have said these are equal. But he says, don't make equal what is actually not equal. He says, the food of the liberal moneylender is purified by faith. That of the other man is defiled by a want of faith. Right? So if someone has faith in the Lord, has faith in the whole, you know, process, then that is pure, that makes everything pure. And someone who is in a very good position but no faith, then it is actually contaminated. Birth may be high, the activities may be high, but if the consciousness is not high, then that affects it. Because the consciousness is what then affects, consciousness affects the ego. From the ego, that affects the intelligence. The intelligence, that affects the mind. And the mind affects your activities. So if the consciousness is pure, then all these other aspects will be purified. If the consciousness is contaminated, even externally, physically, you're performing very high-class activities, they actually become contaminated. Right? Just like I may do some very nice work, some puja, but if I've eaten and haven't washed my hands, I can't say, well, he's doing nice puja. Because the whole puja is contaminated. So in the same way, the consciousness pervades everything. So if the consciousness is wrong, then it doesn't. Apavitro, apavitrova, sarva, vastam, gatopiva. Yasmaret pundarikaksham sabahya bhyantara suchihi. So by remembering the Lord, everything becomes pure. Okay. Let him without tiring always offer sacrifices and perform works of charity with faith. For offerings and charitable works made with faith and with lawfully earned money procure endless rewards. So, again, we have this time, without tiring, means one can never feel bad about doing what is one's duties. Because if one feels bad, then that's a disqualification. One, we can either find, well, it's not one's duty. Right? Manu points out before is that in the performance of duties, after you've taken, you've understood what are the duties according to scripture, according to the Veda, according to the Smriti, then what has been recommended and followed by advanced personalities, the great sages and saints and other such honorable persons, then one must see how one fits oneself. Right. So that then one knows one's position. If one is satisfied in a particular work, this means this is according to one's nature. But this point always untiring. So that means one must be enlivened by it. Then that is, one is purely situated, properly situated. And one will properly get the benefit. And if one is always tired of it, then it may be one is situated improperly. Or it may be one is just very contaminated. You know? When the mode of ignorance has become so strong that it doesn't allow one to even to do properly one's own duties. So one must be very wary that the mind doesn't become tired. Because that's the mind's business, accepting, rejecting. It has no other function. You know, it's a purely binary process. You know, it's not more complicated than that. So if the mind, we find it keeps rejecting, then either we have to be able to purify the mind, convince it that this is what one should do, and do it. Otherwise, one has to change the activity to one that the mind will pretty much always accept. And then in the rare cases, then the intelligent comes into play and makes the mind accept. But if we find that the mind is constantly rejecting, that means we shouldn't be doing that activity. Like that. That is not our particular qualification. Then sacrifice, charity, with faith. So Krishna in the Gita is always mentioning that this charity, penance and sacrifice, that these purify even the great personalities, so they're never to be given up. So this is to be done with money, with facilities or money earned according to one's nature. Like that. Whatever one's occupational duty, according to that, that is what should be used. Not things that are gained by unlawful means. Like that. Let him always practice according to 27. Let him always practice according to his ability, with a cheerful heart, the duty of liberality, both by sacrifices and by charitable works. If he finds a worthy recipient for his gains, for his gifts. If he finds a worthy recipient for his gifts. So charity must be given only to those persons. Did we discuss it in this class in the morning? Can only be given, last night. Can only be given to those who are qualified. Because the whatever we have belongs to the Lord. So we can only give it to somebody who is going to use it properly. Otherwise, that means we're not understanding it belongs to the Lord. We think it's ours to just throw away. Like that. But if we understand it belongs to the Lord, then one has to give it to someone who's going to appreciate that and use it properly. Like that. They don't bother. If you're not scared of them, they won't bother. If he is asked, let him always give something, be it ever so little, without grudging. For a worthy recipient will perhaps be found who saves him from all guilt. Okay, something, even if it's little, without grudging. If it's given in a grudging mood, then that is the mode of ignorance. Like that? It's a passion. Krishna mentions in the Gita that charity must be given out of duty. One knows that it must be done, and it's given because it must be done. Because if one gives it for a particular gain, or one gives it because he just feels obligated but doesn't want to at all, that's not good. That's the mode of ignorance. Yeah, and it says, for perhaps a worthy recipient will be found who saves one from all sin. So one may be able to give, and that giving in charity, the person is so qualified. By giving to him, then you get so much. If you give to someone who is a beggar, who has no qualification, then you will get equal amount back. You give 10 pice, in the future someone will give you 10 pice. Right? Like that. It's equal. If you give to someone who is qualified, you know, has character, a Brahmin like that who has, then you will get more back. You know, I forget the number, what it is, 100 or 1,000 or something. If you give to someone who is very qualified, you know, they have had they're well studied, well realized in this, then you'll get thousands of times returned. Like that. And if you give to someone who is actually self-realized, then you'll get unlimited return. Like this. So it may be a little bit, but it may be that that person is greatly advanced. So by giving, one may get so much back. One may be purified, yes. No, here it says here, who saves one from all guilt, from all sin. Means it'll remove all the sin means the attachment to the material energy. So when one is removed of all that, then one is freed. And then it makes it very easy to gain that attachment to the Lord. Otherwise, then one gets held back by that. That's why if one is with proper faith and all that, chants the holy name. Absorbs oneself in the proper chanting and sadhana and association, then all these things go away, and one starts to gain their mood. So by giving, that's one gains all that. You don't get the material benefit. That is, if the Lord wants, is that the whole process of the karmakanda has arisen because many are not willing to wait around for the Lord to give something when he likes. Right? People get impatient. Because the Lord is only looking for your benefit. He doesn't need anything. So he's only going to give you something when you actually need it. it will do benefit for you. Like the father would like to give money to the child. He'd like to give him his whole estate, everything. But if the child's too young or too immature, he cannot give. He wants to give, but he can't give. If he gives, it'll be wasted. So the child may think it's very nice, but in actuality, it's not nice. It's not proper. Because then to waste in this, and then he'll develop bad character. So the father will wait. So when one approaches the Lord, he may or may not give whatever he likes, because he's waiting to see when it will be good for you. But many people, they want more quick results, so they go to the demigods. Because the demigods, you just come, you ask, they give. Right? But what's unknown is that they have to go and ask the Lord. Right? Krishna says in the Gita that someone approaches the demigods. Demigods can't create faith in us. They cannot do that. Huh? The Lord has to instill the faith from Paramatma, has to give you faith in that demigod. Otherwise, it won't work. How they'll give, right? So the Lord gives us that faith, because it's indirect. The direct way is to go to the Lord straight. Indirect way is to go through the demigods, right? Because the process of going to the demigods is given by the Lord. So you follow that process, and then you may get. But it's still approved by the Lord. But it appears that it's coming more quickly. So therefore, many people take that path. So even you give to the Lord, give to this, then depending upon your desire, if you want material results, then the Lord doesn't like to give material results, but generally you'll find you'll get it. Because that's what we desire. He'll try many ways to get us to change our opinion, change our desire. But if that's not, then that'll be given. But he will always try to fulfill the desire in such a way we lose that attachment for the material desire. Right? That's the Lord's cleverness. He fulfills the desire, but so you'll lose the interest in it. Like that.
Even just one point.
Huh, yes.
Getting about the same demigods.
Huh, yes.
Demigods give something.
Huh.
And if there is any side effects of it, the demigods have no power to rectify it.
Yes.
Whereas whatever the God used,
yeah.
There is no question of side effects or something like that.
Yes.
So that is again one more additional point.
Ah, yes.
For not going through.
Yes. Yes, yes. Very good. That is a very good point. Huh?
Like Rikasura. He went to Shiva wanting
to be. Oh, yeah.
He's on
the tier. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Because that's why it's also good not to. You find if you approach the Lord, or you approach the demigods for something, one will definitely be frustrated. But you find when you approach the Lord, and instead of asking Him for pure love, pure devotion, and then engage in the service, if we ask Him for something specific, you know, give me this or that, even if it's for service, you'll find Krishna will give it, but you will find some anxiety in that, because there was attachment for that item. That's why you asked for it. And then one finds many times that there's one gains that, but then one finds it a great disturbance. So it's better never to ask for anything other than just devotion. Like that. Service to the Vaishnavas, service to the Acharyas, you know, understanding of their direction. Like that. That is best. Because one can ask, and he'll give. But it's not that we will not afterwards think, you know. Okay. A giver of water obtains the satisfaction of his hunger and thirst. A giver of food, imperishable happiness. A giver of sesame, desirable offspring. A giver of a lamp, a most excellent eyesight. So then it goes to all different kinds of things that you can give, and then what benefits you get from them. Then, after giving, going through all this, and a giver of the Veda, then union with the Lord. So the gift of the Veda surpasses all other gifts: water, food, cows, land, clothes, sesame, gold, and clarified butter. For whatever purpose a man bestows any gift, for that same purpose he receives in his next birth with due honor its reward. So if you give something material, then that's what you give. You give knowledge. That's the best. Because then that means you give that, then you, it's knowledge about the Lord. The Lord's name, His form, His paraphernalia, His pastimes. Then that's what you'll get. It's like if you understand the Lord is eternal and unborn, then in the future we will find we are unborn and eternal. If we understand He has a transcendental body, we will receive a transcendental body. So if we give to others knowledge and all that about the Lord, then that is what we will receive. We will receive actual understanding and realization of the Lord. So this is where the principle comes: if you teach, then you learn more. Because if you give transcendental knowledge, then one will realize that. Like that. This doesn't mean that amongst devotees that there is not exchange of gifts. This is just part of relationship. But one is not giving for the material benefits that will come. One is not thinking, well, I'll give this and then I'll get this result. You know? Yeah. You give a garment a place in the world of the moon. So one doesn't give for these purposes. One gives simply that this is exchange. It means relationship between people must be expressed through something. Right? Because we have to perceive it with the senses. Like that. But that is only the carrier of it. You give someone a gift, the gift is not the important item. The gift is just what you are expressing the affection through. Right? Huh?
It's a media.
Yes, it's a media. That's all. So it's just like we make an offering to the Lord. The offering itself is nothing of, you know, great importance, because the Lord already owns the whole cosmic creation. There's nothing we can actually give Him. It's His. It's just like giving water of the Ganga back into the Ganga. Or offering a lamp to the sun. The light in the lamp is coming from the sun. The water from the Ganga is coming from the Ganga. But there's nothing else you can offer. Right? So that's what's offered. So this whole material world is come from the Lord. So there isn't anything actually we can offer of our own. So what we're offering is simply the Lord's back. But by doing that, it is the devotion that is there. So it's just a medium. Right? So that medium that is being offered, that's the important point. So we have to accept that. How you say? Yeah. So that is all that's happening. Just showing our affection for the Lord, showing our affection for the devotees, that reciprocation, that is what is going on. That is what is being established. Yes, it says here, both he who respectfully receives a gift and he who respectfully bestows it is elevated. On the contrary case, they both fall into hell. Let him not be proud of his austerities. Let him not utter a falsehood after he has offered a sacrifice. Let him not speak ill of brahmanas, though he be tormented by them. When he has bestowed a gift, let him not boast of it. By falsehood, a sacrifice becomes vain. By self-complacency, the reward for austerities is lost. Longevity is lost by speaking evil of brahmanas, and the reward of a gift by boasting. Giving no pain to any creature, let him slowly accumulate spiritual merit for the sake of acquiring a companion in the next world, just as the white ant gradually raises its hill. So here's another one of the hidden points. As we discussed before, there's the direct, there's the indirect, and there's the hidden meanings of all these things. So here, again, this point, let him give no pain to any creature. When they actually talk about the transcendental realization, transcendental situation, transcendental perfection, then you'll see the scriptures always bring this point in. That devotion to the Lord, the service to the Lord, the sadhana, but always also compassion to other living entities, not hurting other living entities, being kind to other living entities. You'll always find that. All the, in the Gita, the Bhagavatam here, we see in Manu's Law, all these aspects, they always come in. They're always being discussed. So here, let him accumulate spiritual merit for the sake of acquiring a companion in the next world, just as the white ant gradually raises its heel. Now we're talking about spiritual merit. Spiritual merit is not for getting one to the heavenly planet. So here, though it is using these wordings we were discussing this morning, that someone feels comfortable with a certain kind of wording. They use the right word and they feel comfortable. Like if I say, one should get an overview of the situation. Okay, now 10, 15 years ago, that would have been the right word. Now you have to say, you have to get the whole picture or have a holistic understanding. If you use these words, then people feel very comfortable with it. So the words themselves, and when you hear the word, then you don't look into it any further. Oh, yes, very nice. So therefore you'll see is that generally these scriptures that are meant for general masses of people always use general terminology like that. The Manusamhita, well, because it's for everybody. Whether they're a theist or an atheist, they're supposed to follow Manusamhita. So therefore you have to use words that's going to be acceptable to everyone. So if you say, you know, one will attain the highest position of Brahman, right? Then as soon as you use the word Brahman, then the Karmakanda is happy, the Jnanakanda is happy, the Yogi is happy. They're all yes. But we see that it says the highest position of Brahman. But in Brahman, there's no variety. So how is it here we've stated that in Brahman there's higher positions, and so someone who does this will attain the highest position of Brahman, right? Before we say he attains Brahman, but here we say the highest position of Brahman. So as soon as you use the word Brahman, the Brahmavadis will just leave it. The Mayavadis, oh yes, here, we'll go to the Brahman. But if they actually think about what it's saying, the highest position means going to the spiritual realm, the spiritual planets, because that's the highest position in the Brahman. The Brahman, being situated in Brahman, is the lowest position. But going to the spiritual planets, that is the highest position. But they don't think. As soon as they hear the word, then they're happy. So here then we see that here it's giving no pain to any living entity, and let him slowly accumulate spiritual merit. So now we actually know is that he's being kind to others. He's being very gentle, humble, respecting all other living entities. So therefore, he's very qualified in this way. And he is accumulating spiritual merit. Right? This is his activities. So this can't be a material activity. We're not talking about karmis. We're not talking about jnanis. We're not talking about yogis. We're talking about devotees. We're talking about devotees of the Lord. We're not talking about someone else. Then, acquiring a companion in the next world. Okay, so the next world. Now the karmakan is, oh great, next world. You know, and you know, I'll go to the moon or the sun or this, and I'll get a nice companion. So they're already thinking of, you know, some nice beautiful lady or some nice very handsome man or like this. But we've already said before the preliminaries by being not giving pain to any living creature is not what it takes to get to the heavenly planets. You just have to perform your proper sacrifices. You do you kill 100 horses, you become Indra. So you didn't give pain, you gave a lot of pain to a lot of creatures. So they're not talking about heavenly planets here. Right? So that place you can go where you give no pain to any living entities, only the spiritual realm. And they've used spiritual merit, but they use all these nice words here. Here, and then the Karmakandis, the Jnanakandis, they'll be bewildered. They won't notice what it says. They will do their duty nicely. Because if we just say, yes, you should perform your devotional activities, being very respectful to all other living entities, and in this way go back to the Godhead, go to the spiritual realm. Now, will a Karmi or Jnani then want to follow this? No. They'll go, hey, what happened? You know, wait a minute, I want to go to the moon. You know? So we can see, after giving all these things, of all the things you give in charity, and you can go to this planet, that planet, you'll get wealth, you get power, you get fame. Then, at the conclusion, it says, one who gives the Veda, then that gets the best benefit, because then you get transcendence. Then, it talks about, so therefore, let him, without giving any difficulty to anyone, then accumulate spiritual merit. So it's taking one through. So this is the conclusion here. In other words, all the things before weren't so important. But for the Karmi and Jnani, when they read this, you don't want them to write that off. Otherwise, they're not going to give anything to anybody. They're going to remain sinful. So Krishna said, if you can't be a devotee, then at least be pious. Right? Best is you surrender and become a pure devotee. Right? Just sarva dharmam parityaja. You just do that. If you can't do that, then you take up sadhana bhakti. You follow the rules and regulations of devotional service. If you can't do that, then you follow varnashram for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. He says, if you can't do that, then at least just be a nice person, a pious person. If you can't follow varnashram to please the Lord, because Krishna says, work for me, then follow it to please yourself. Because at least by doing that, you'll benefit other living entities. You'll give them something nice, and maybe one day you'll be lucky. You'll give something to a devotee of the Lord, and you'll be benefited. Like that. So at least do that. Then, it goes, if you can't do that, then you follow Gyan. It's like the bottom of the pile. If you can't be just a nice, pious person, okay, then become a Mayavadi, you know, become a Brahmavadi. You can't do it. Then you sit down and you study Upanishads and that, and just do that. And then he says, better than that is meditation. So better than the jnani is the yogi. And then he says, better than that is the proper performance of prescribed duties. So he takes it back again to the third option. So it's interesting is that the jnan is the lowest of considerations. So that has been brought out here. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That verse, manmana bhava. Engage your mind always in thinking of it. And then it's been described, if you can't do that, then manbhakta will become my devotee. And if you can't do that, then madhyaji will work for me. Sorry. Offer obeisances. And then
Namaskuru.
Namaskuru. If you can't worship me. In other words, the Vrajabasi, he's always thinking of Krishna. And if you can't do that, then you do follow the sadhana as a bhakta, man bhakta. And if you can't do that, then worship me. You work. And then you perform some service, some puja. If you can't do that, then at least you offer namaskar.
That's interesting. You could hear? And he's saying just in that line of those later verses, then you have that manmanabhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. That then the first thing is manmana, is you always remember the Lord. Then if you can't remember the Lord all the time then manmana bhava madbhakto. Then you take the mood of the devotee and try to perform the devotion sadhana. So the first was his full surrender. If not, then sadhana. Then madhyaji. Then you take up the worship, the sadhana, performance of the rituals. And then if not, if you can't do that, then at least just offer some respects. You know? At least something. So the whole idea is that one can find something that one can do for the Lord. Someone can do. There's always something that anybody can do for the Lord. So there's some nice position. And here it says, for the sake of acquiring a companion in the next world. So now if we've gotten spiritual benefit in all this, then in the next world, what are we dealing with? A companion. So that means the Supreme Lord. He is the eternal companion. He's the one who one will be with eternally. So by performance of spiritual benefit, then one will become, will go to the spiritual realm. So the companion there is the Lord and the Lord's devotees. Right? So this is there. 239, for in the next world neither father, nor mother, nor wife, nor sons, nor relations stay to be his companions. Spiritual merit alone remains with him. Like that. Single 240. Single is each being born. Single it dies. Single it enjoys the rewards of its virtue. Single it suffers the punishment of its sin. Leaving the dead body on the ground like a log of wood or a clod of earth, the relatives depart with averted faces. But spiritual merit follows the soul. Right? Here is that there's always the feeling that, you know, it's the family will protect, the relatives, all these different things, and at those last moments of death, they will be the ones that will be there to console and all this. But as soon as you actually leave, then they all look at you, you mean the body, the soul is gone, they don't go with you. They just turn their face and walk away. You know? Like that, that's all. They don't go with you. Like that. So you're left, simply you take with you your spiritual merit. So if one has devotion for the Lord, has that service towards the Lord, then that is what goes with you, and then one goes to the spiritual realm. Let him therefore always slowly accumulate spiritual merit in order that it may be his companion after death. For with merit as his companion, he will traverse a gloom difficult to traverse. And then also important here, it says slowly accumulate. It means according to the speed that you can actually perform it. Otherwise, sometimes one may be very enthusiastic and decide, okay, you know, I'm eating three times a day, this is nonsense, I'll only eat once a day at a very small amount, and then after 3 days, again, then he's eating 10 times a day. So this is not exactly what is meant. One should gradually just perform those activities that one can develop and all. Otherwise, if one tries to move too quickly, then that is not good. At the speed that one can actually move and keep association that is always more advanced than ourselves so that we advance nicely here. Yeah. So this, yeah, the spiritual merit, then that will manifest. When one has spiritual consciousness, that will manifest as spiritual form, spiritual activities. You know, these are the things that one is trying to develop. That companion, or the spiritual merit, speedily conducts the man who is devoted to duty and effaces his sins by austerities to the next world, radiant and clothed with an ethereal body. So when we give this here, it's understood that for those who are the Karmakandis, they will see this ethereal body. They will be interested in the heavenly planets. But we see here, as we've been talking, spiritual merit, that doesn't give one the heavenly planets. So here we're talking about a spiritual form. But by using the word ethereal, then the Karmakandis or the Gyanakandis, they will leave it. The Karmakandis will think, I'll go to a heavenly planet where I'll have a very nice, fine body. You know, I'll go to the sun planet, I'll go to the moon, like this. And the Gyanakandis will think, I'll go to the Brahman, very ethereal form. Like that. Let him who desires to raise his... Let him who desires to raise himself ever form connections with the most excellent men and shun all lower ones. So this is Rupa Goswami's point of always associating with those who are more advanced. A Brahmin who always connects himself with the most excellent ones and shuns all inferior ones, himself becomes most distinguished. By an opposite conduct, he becomes unqualified. He who is persevering, gentle, and patient, shuns the company of men with cruel conduct, and does no injury to living creatures, gains if he constantly lives in that manner, by controlling his organs, and by liberality, heavenly bliss. He may accept from any man fuel, water, roots, fruit, food offered without asking, and honey, likewise a gift which consists in a promise of protection. So it mentions here he can accept from any man. The difficulty before was in cooked foods, because that carries the consciousness. But here, if someone, out of appreciation of someone who has good, by keeping good association, then one gains good qualities. And then by the gain of those qualities, people appreciate that. They want to give something. Then there's no harm. He can accept from anyone. He say he may accept from any man fuel, water, roots, fruit, food offered without asking, and honey. Because when you ask, then here they're just coming and giving. Like that. So it's a gift, it's respect. While the other one is you've asked, they're giving. You get fed, they give you karma.
There's no karma in this?
In this there'll be something, of course. But the point is, it's being given in faith, so it's purified. See, the other thing before is you're asking, so there's no faith there. Necessarily faith. You take from somebody their food. It is not an act of faith on their part. But here, they are coming themselves, unasked, and offering it. That means they have respect. That means there's some faith there. In the person, in the process of the given by the Lord, of respecting saintly persons, that they have either faith in that, either the person themselves or the process of giving to elevated persons. So faith is there in the Lord. The Lord, His process, His devotees. So that then purifies it, as it mentioned. One cannot accept something from a moneylender. But if that moneylender has faith, you know, in the Lord, then that is, it's purified, because He's a devotee. So here, if they have faith in that process and come and give of their own, then it is purified. So it means these things won't carry karma. There may be some consciousness there. If it's given in good consciousness, then there's no problem. They become purified by that act. They become purified. Yeah, the Lord of created beings, Prajapati, has declared that alms freely offered and brought by the giver himself may be accepted even from a sinful man, provided the gift had not been asked for or promised beforehand. Means I didn't ask today, but he promised it before, you know. But it's just someone out of their faith comes and gives, like that. Means if I ask before him to give, and then he promises it, then he comes and gives it. This means it's unasked at all, you know, like that. During 15 years, the manes do not eat the food of that man who disdains a freely offered gift, nor does the fire carrying his offerings to the gods. For 15 years, not even 12. Normally the reactions are 12 years, but here it's even a little longer. A quarter more, right? Yeah, three. So here, this is a very important thing, is that it mentioned before about not accepting. Both he who respectfully receives a gift and he who respectfully bestows it go are elevated. On the contrary case, they both fall into hell. Because the reason why one wouldn't respectfully receive it, right? Someone's respectfully giving it, why you would not respectfully receive it? Then it gets him. Pride of austerities, falsehoods, speaking ill of brahmanas, boasting. These things then create that. Remember there was, I think there was, I can't remember the festival, but there's some big festival. I don't know if it was Janmashtami, if it was Govardhan Puja or something. And they were in Calcutta, the Bhagwazar Mat, And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was there, and, you know, watching the arrangements, everything's going on, and everyone's very, very busy, doing big work, big, big work. And there was some, you know, old lady, you know. You know, they, you know, you see the widows, old, small, and like that. She had two lemons she was trying to give for the program, right? They're arranging big, huge prasad arrangements, everything. Like that. And this lady's coming with two lemons, right? And everyone's, well, she comes up to different people and it's kind of, oh, they send her to this one, send her to that one, oh, go talk to this one, go talk. They're all too busy doing big, big service. So then after watching this for a while, then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then he goes over to the lady and holds out his upper cloth and he says, Bhavati Bhiksham Dehi. And then she gives the lemons. And then she's very, very happy in that. And then he goes and he gives them to the Bhujari and say, you put these on the deity's plate. Like that. So, nothing is too small. Like that. Because it only becomes small when we think we're very big. Because if we look at it, how big is the Lord? So even how much we can arrange, how big is that compared to Him? Right? We may be able to, even we can offer this whole planet. Right? We are the emperor of the planet, we want to offer the whole planet. This planet is one small planet in this whole universe. And this is the smallest universe of unlimited universes. And these are just coming out of the pores of Mahavishnu. So how small are they? Right? So there's no, it's nothing. You know? But the living entity, what is it? I think it was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that. There's nothing so amazing as that the most small thinks he is the most big. You know? It means the soul that is Anu, 1/10,000th the tip of a hair, thinks I am so big and great. Like that. So because of the pride of one's austerities, one's learning, you know, one's abilities, you know, whatever it may be, then one's position, then one can't offer respectfully. Someone comes to offer, but, you know, it's too small time. No, when gifts are offered, one must be respectful oneself, because they are coming to honor. It's a formal situation. So as soon as that formality comes, then one has to reciprocate with that. It means later on we'll come across for the I don't know if it's in here or with the hermit, the sannyasi, that when someone offers them obeisances, if they don't reciprocate, then two things happen. One, they take all the bad results of the person. It means someone offers obeisances and the sannyasi acknowledges that, you know, then that respect is happened. But if the person offers obeisances and one doesn't pay attention, one takes the bad karma of that person. It doesn't say some, it says all. Like that. And the only reason is because of pride. We're too busy. Right? We're too busy. One may say, well, I have lots to do, I can't sit around while everyone offers obeisances. But then that would be like a mother saying, I don't have time to take care of the kid, I'm too busy taking care of that. I mean, why did one get married and have children unless it's to take care of them? So it just goes with the, it just comes along with it. You know? It's just one of the duties. So one has to reciprocate. So this is the point here. So when someone's offering a gift to a Brahmin, to a devotee, they have to respectfully receive that. No matter how big, small, because it says here a gift of water. Right? You know, someone just comes and offers water, some fuel, means some wood for the fire or something. You know, it doesn't mean they're coming along and giving a gas bottle, but, you know, whatever, maybe modern gift. But it generally means fuel for the fire, because the Brahmin is always performing yajna, he has to cook for the deity, all these things. So they come and give for this. Water, they come and give water for the puja, for drinking, or, you know, in some way just come and help bring water. You need water for, you know, Brahmins need water. They use it for everything. Everybody needs. Roots, fruits, you know, they're simple things. Food without asking. Honey. Honey is astringent. It's pure. It's very pure. So it's not contaminated like that. It's a very pure thing.
An example of
speak
service,
louder.
The service, the example of one example of service not being too small and reciprocation is the spider.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. That story, Prahlad's mentioning the story of Hanuman when they're throwing the big mountain tops. They're not just throwing rocks into the ocean. When they built the bridge to Lanka, they're not just throwing the rocks. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Yes, yes, please. 10 o'clock. Hare Krishna. The rocks, they're not just throwing how you say, boulders, just any old rock that they pick up. They're taking tops of mountains. It's interesting, you'll see on a mountain is that there's a lot of dirt along the side and trees and that, but there's one point at which the trees stop growing, and you see then from there up it's just rock. So they're coming and just collecting that part of the mountain in one piece, and then bringing that, and then writing Ram's name on it and throwing it in the ocean. So they're doing big, big service. So then Hanuman's coming with a big, big mountain, and there's a little spider in the way, right? He's sitting down on the edge of the ocean and kicking in, you know, little tiny grains of sand, you know, most likely not even the big grains, the small grains of sand. He says, you know, move out of my way, you know, because I'm doing this big service. You know, and you're just flicking a little sand in. And then Lord Ramachandra came and said, don't mind, but I see both as equal. Because you're doing, you have the strength to lift mountains. So you're lifting mountains. He has the strength to kick in grains of sand. He's doing that. But I see him as equal because they're both doing their best. So like that. So his service is not too small.
There's another story to do with Hanuman in relation to it. So the example where the person's come to bring lemons. The whole purpose of having a festival is to inspire people to, you know, bring things to the Lord.
Yeah, yeah.
So the whole purpose has been forgotten in the busyness of the activity.
Yeah, yeah.
So Kantaya Prabhu was telling me there's a story where one man wanted to have darshan of Hanuman. And it was a 24-day yagya, many rituals. But after 12 days, Hanuman came. And the man said, look, please wait. This yagya takes 24 days, so please come again, you know, after some time. So he completely forgot why he was doing it. Hanuman himself came, which was the object. He was so absorbed in the ritual, he forgot the real purpose behind it.
Yeah, nice. Right. Which? Yes, that is the difficulty is that we do forget, we lose the essence. That's why one always tries to associate with those more advanced, because then one gains a little bit more remembrance of that by seeing their activities. Then that is why Krishna is mentioning, means as Krishna gives these alternatives as they come down from always being absorbed and surrendering to Him completely and fully always remembering Him, that's the essence that always remains. No matter what's going on, as the process comes down, when we get then next to sadhana bhakti, our goal still has to be to always remember the Lord. And that when we come down to the working for Krishna, the varnashram, still the goal is to, through the forms of sadhana bhakti, come to the platform of always remembering Krishna. Means the higher elements must always be remembered. So then, how do you say? But in this, that is because of that nature to forget, that's why Krishna has expanded these ways. I may not remember Krishna all the time, but I may be able to get myself absorbed in sadhana, which is coming from the Lord. So even if I'm not fully remembering the Lord, then at least I get the benefit of performing the sadhana, because it is the order of the Lord. You're following the order of Guru and of Krishna. So at least the benefit's there. But if you really want to get dynamic benefit, you have to perform that for the purpose of remembering the Lord and trying to remember the Lord. Then that goes very quickly. But even if not, the benefit still is there. It's just that you're following the order. And if you can't absorb yourself fully in that way, then an option is given where one can then absorb oneself in the, activities of the Varnashram. As you perform those duties for Krishna, you perform whatever is your position according to that, do that for Krishna. Then in all little things, then we have an opportunity to remember Krishna. And if we don't, at least we're performing those for Krishna. Like that. So that way there's kind of like a double benefit. But if one actually wants to make proper advancement and not be deviated, one has to at least try to remember that the purpose is to remember Krishna. Right? Even if you can't remember Krishna, you should remember that the purpose is to remember him. Does that make sense? You know, it's like that, what is it? That famous class, Jayapataka Maharaj, about I don't know how many, how long before, but it was long time before. He says, one should cry for Krishna. But if you can't cry for Krishna, then you should cry to cry for Krishna. If you can't cry to cry for Krishna, then you should cry to cry to cry for Krishna. If you can't cry to cry to cry for Krishna, then you should cry to cry to cry to cry. Like this, he went on for about 5 minutes. Like that. I think the point was given across. But the thing is in all this, one should always remember that the purpose is to remember the Lord. Always remember the Lord, never forget. That's the essential Vedic principle. And then that the knowledge that is given of how to remember and never forget him comes in the form of sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. It always comes in these three, like that. And then in this, then, one should try to understand the purposes behind and what is the conclusions. But in doing that, one should always remember that the goal is to develop love for Krishna, to chant, and the process. So always the goal is to purely chant the holy name without offenses. Right? And sambandha, to always remember that we're servants of the Lord. So there we see, after going into so many technical details, then, it comes back up and starts to bring out the higher principles here. So this is for the purpose of reminding us that chanting the Lord's holy names, that associating with more advanced personalities, associating with the devotees properly, giving charity, accepting charity, reciprocating with others very nicely, being kind to other living entities, that the goal is to go to the spiritual realm. So these things always come up. So here, that was why the dissatisfaction was there in Vyasadeva. Because he had compiled all these literatures. And after compiling them, then he saw that he hadn't very clearly just said, this is it, folks. Just worship the Lord and go back to Godhead. That's the real thing. Because he's put it everywhere. He's written the whole Mahabharata, 100,000 verses. In it, he's put 700 verses that point to this fact, very obviously. Right? So here, we see in the Manusmita, then so much is there. And he points this out. There's no Vedic literature that doesn't point this out. That's why it says you cannot blaspheme the Vedic literatures. Because this is all they're pointing out. But Chaitanya says the Vedic literature is only discussing sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. It's not discussing something else. So, So then, but it's not obvious. Because I've heard many devotees talk that they've read Manusamhita, And they find that it has nothing to do with, you know, how devotees could apply it. It has nothing to do with his age. You know, so many different things. But somehow or another, in going through it, I generally find that the same conclusions that Prabhupada gives in the books are there, just in the wording. And the emphasis is that after pages of other things, then in the conclusion of that particular section, then it gives the spiritual conclusions. But written in language meant to, you know, be general, general language, you know. Like that. You don't, yeah. Like that. So then, but its purpose is there. But the Bhagavatam means we've already kicked out all those things that have nothing to do with devotional service. What's meant for the karmis and jnanis, we've kicked it out here. And now we're just talking what is meant for devotees, you know, like that. Then it's very obvious that this is what it's being. But even then, many times even devotees miss. They don't, like the fifth canto. You ask anyone, what do you think of the fifth canto? Oh, it's all just about times and planets and all that. There's some of the most wonderful prayers and talking about the Lord and the Lord's description and talk about rasa in the fifth canto. It's just going after it says time, because everything moves by time. And then it describes the create, because without time you can't have creation. So time must be there first. Then you in the Manu Samhita, after describing everything, it has to describe time. Because time, without time, there's no movement. Without movement, there's no activity. And then the Manu Samhita is what is proper activity and proper activity. So you have to know time. So it also goes through and disclaims all the same things, not in as much detail as Bhagavatam. It's just anything that has movement in it has to have time. So it describes the time because you're going to then get into the planets. Because you have to know also just how it all functions. Then once it gets into the planets, then it gets down to what do the living entities of that planets, what do they do and what's their relationship to the Lord? How do they deal with the Lord? What is their prayers? What is their service? What is their meditation? So that's what it's doing. It's showing all over the universe, everybody is absorbed in some way or another. Everybody comes. You know, it's either they're directly understanding or they're having a potency of the Lord and they recognize that aspect. So it's nice, but so even there, it's all kicked out. It may not be understood. Yeah, what time is it? Any other questions or comments? You have a tea engagement.
Yeah. Some of these points about receiving. It's alright to receive water from somebody who's not qualified?
Yeah, as long as the water is. That means you receive it. Whether you can use it is another thing, but at least you receive it. You know, it depends upon the situation. You know? But it basically means if someone is offering out of their kindness, then that can be accepted.
If you go to someone's house, then they're not pure people. And then there it says that you can eat their meal, I think. Is that what it said?
It depends upon the situation, because there that goes taking a meal at someone's house, because by going to their house, they're obliged to receive you as a guest. So just you've come to their house generally means that you're looking for something. So then that's a natural reciprocation. So it says you have to be careful of whose houses you're going eating at. Because you'd see Lord Chaitanya might stay at any devotee's house. But he would eat only at other person's houses. Because of the social stranding, he would only eat at Brahman's houses. But he would stay at any devotee's house. But he would take his meals, you know, so that no one would criticize, because of they expect these rules to be followed. But this is means you're sitting in your place and then somebody just walks up to you and then offers. Because that's an act of faith. So the faith purifies it. But you go to their house, if they're pious or not, whether they receive a guest properly or not, whether they're devotees or not, this and that, then that it may not purify their offering.
Sometimes people cook something at home and they bring, and then they're afraid to eat because they don't know the standards. Grains. I'm not an issue.
Yeah, you'd have to... Well, here it's generally it says any person. One has to be careful. But if it's done as an act of faith, they've come in because here's spiritual persons and this and that, then there's not so much problem. Mm-hmm. Same time as it's probably... Because we're dealing with our own communities, it's probably good to know who's there and things like that. You know, so they can be trained.
And then grains that are pre-cooked.
Grains that are pre-cooked.
Or half-cooked, like chira.
No, chira, muri don't count in that. Parboiled rice counts. It means chira muri, because. I think the concept is that they're changed into something else. The parboiled rice just it makes it easier to husk, and then it gives it a different texture and things like that. More because it's more chewy, you know. Then that is not because that's not considered pure. But the muri and all those, then that's somehow doesn't come into that consideration.
Good. Pasta be similarly because it's also changed into something else.
But it's not cooked. You grind the grains raw, then they're mixed with water, you make a dough, and then they stuff it through some machine that makes it into some shape and then dry it. So that's not cooked. Like that.
In Poland, you can get something like muri.
Yeah, so that can be used. You know, most places where you can get something kind of like muri, like that. If it's been processed, means if you buy the muri, I mean the just the puffed rice, you know. Some places call it rice bubbles or stuff. But once it's been processed, then they make it into something like you know, Kellogg's Rice Krispies, then you're taking on the nature of the people who have produced it.
Sugar, vitamins,
yeah, yeah. That, because they've put it through a process like that, and that's not so good. Especially nowadays, you don't know what kind of processes they use. You know, it's just like they'll take sugar and cook it, and then you'll get your different kinds of these little sugar sweets and stuff like that. But that doesn't count. I guess that's also it's not grain. But the plain raw puffed, then that's all right. That can be taken and purified and offered and then eaten. Puffed rice can be used. I mean, rice can be used like that. Unhusked rice won't be used because that's Lakshmi. But husked rice or puffed rice, or generally in the yagya they'll use koi, which is it's like where you take the rice and you pop it in the husk, so it pops bigger. Like popcorn, like that.
Fat
rice is generally parboiled.
Parboiled.
Yeah, so generally one avoids.
What about
using that
to make idli or dosha, for instance? Part of the mixture is parboiled rice. They mix parboiled rice, and then two types of flour, and they soak that, and then grind it.
I don't know. That would be an interesting point to ask. That you could ask these South Indians tomorrow. Because, they would, that's probably a major part of their diet. And they as rice, won't eat parboiled. They'll always eat it. It always has to be atab, unboiled.
I was wondering if it's possible to parboil the rice at home or something, and then
That may be. Maybe that's what they're doing. I mean, that's what the tradition was. I don't know. We could ask them tomorrow.
Prabhupada mentions about double-boiled rice in quite a few letters.
Yeah.
He says that cheer is okay, but otherwise...
Double-boiled rice, not, no. It's not a... It's not proper. You know, it's not proper. Also, when it is better for the brain, the finer brain tissues, the unboiled. Boiled is mainly it's basically labor food, you know, that kind of thing. They like it best. You know, it's chewy, al dente, you know. Like that. That's why it's got some bite to it. You feel you've eaten something, while the atta just is like air, you know, it's like they don't feel they've eaten anything.
I heard that one time they were only serving basmati rice in the big kitchen. All the brahmacharis practically went on strike.
No, I don't know, maybe. Maybe there was, I think they did change the rice and there was a problem at one time. But they used to have one kitchen because one kitchen only gave rice, dal, and sabji. And the other kitchen gave chapatis, dal, and sabji, and a very small amount of fine rice. Generally here you don't get basmati, you get govinda bones, like that. So then, you know, I saw many brahmacharis would come over to check out the kitchen where the chapatis were being served. But when they found out that the amount of rice that they would give would fit in a clay cup. And that was a clay cup that you could put on the plate. So that means not piled up. Then they would turn around and go back to the other kitchen. Like that. That's all. So they do like the heavier, because then they feel it's something solid. It depends upon the style of eating. Like that. Generally those who eat the finer rice eat more vegetables. Like that. While those who eat the heavier rice eat less. The rice is more prominent, and then you put something on it to give flavor and to make it, you know, wet. And then you use the vegetables and other things kind of more just for flavor, just as a flavoring to that. You know? While the other way is that you're just giving more body to the sabji by mixing it with the rice. Like that. Okay, we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.